January the 1st, 1956. Dear diary, the beginning of another year. I sense a year of great importance in my life. I feel fate will take a hand, and if I am equal to its challenge, I know this will be a year of great achievement. This morning, I had an egg for my breakfast. January the 2nd, Puppy ran away with my dinner. January the 3rd, oh, it's raining. But what is rain to a man of greatness?
Sound Forecasting's principal aim is to meet the requirements of listeners who look to their radio for relaxation, for information, and for advice. The BBC also seeks to cater for those for whom broadcasting can be a source of intellectual stimulation and aesthetic adventure.
The average cost of a road accident in this country is £800, including legal expenses, police work, and so on.
What do you know?
Welcome to the 35th edition of Birds in Britain. Everybody who keeps a bird table knows the great tit and the blue tit. Most of us who live in the country know also the long-tailed tit and the coal tit.
Shipping forecast for the next 24 hours. Iceland, wind variable or southeast, force 2, becoming northeast, force 5, showers, good visibility. Bailey, Rockall, winds southerly, force 2, freshening to force 4, rain later.
It was in June 1954 that the lad Wallace Greenslade first came to the BBC seeking refuge from hard work.
Good morning, miss. I'm Mr. W. Greenslade.
Oh, yes, you've come for the vacant post of announcer.
Yes, I have.
Do take a seat with the other applicants.
Thank you. I sat down next to a man wearing a brass deerstalker, white cricket boots, and a shredded cardboard wig.
Hello.
Good morning.
Wind like a variable.
Pardon?
Well, I said the wind's like a variable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wind like a variable. I'm practicing, you know.
Don't tell me you're applying for the post of announcer.
Oh, yeah. And I'll get it too, you see. I'm wearing a Cambridge tie.
You? You were at Cambridge?
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Buying a tie.
40s, Dogger, Humber, Heligoland, Thames, Dover, White, Portland. Winds variable, force 2, becoming southerly, force 4, fair, moderate visibility. Finisterre, Biscay, winds northeasterly, force 2 to 4.
We are bringing in changes in the time and content of the weather broadcasts from Sunday onwards. The most important feature is the transfer of all shipping information to the light program, long wave transmission. It has been decided to introduce 4 new names of sea areas. The eastern part of the present Forties and Dogger areas become Viking and Fisher, respectively. Heligoland is renamed German Bight, and Iceland becomes Southeast Iceland, to avoid confusion with North Iceland.
Where it'll be rather warm. Winds will be light variable tonight, becoming light or moderate southerly during tomorrow.
Goodbye. I think you have it, Mr. Greenslade. You can start work at once.
Gad! Me, a BBC announcer. This is the BBC Light Programme.
Presenting Peter Brass and Archie Andrews with Beryl Reid, Ken Platt, Alexander Gage, Dick Embry, Ronald Chesney, and the BBC Review Orchestra conducted by Harry Rabinowitz in Educating Archie.
Don't keep getting at me. It's not my fault I'm weak. It's my war wound that keeps playing up with me.
Oh, please, please. Don't give me that stuff about your war wound. Little scratch on the arm from the officer's nails as he ripped your stripe off.
Take it from here. Go the way when you can take it from here.
Beloved, but how would you like it if I did something that made you go all hot under the collar?
Right, Owen.
Oh, no, I've seen that.
Go on, Eph, just a kiss. No, we'll
no,
have to...
Hello,
hello, hello.
In the second of a series of four BBC talks about space travel, entitled Ticket to the Moon, Peter Scott will interview Patrick Moore of the British Astronomical Association on the first port of call.
Well now, Moore, suppose we've got a spaceship. Where do we go?
Well, I think there's no question as to that. We must go first to the moon.
Journey into space. The BBC presents Jet Morgan in Operation Luna.
All we're going to find is an ashy waste, probably volcanic, with thousands upon thousands of walled circular formations that are called lunar craters, and high mountains and deep valleys. On the moon, there is no intelligent life, and almost certainly no plant life either. The moon is a dead world.
In the televiewer screen appeared the image of a strange object.
Good heavens! Who is it? What is it?
Must be H.G. Wells' lot.
There's only one way to find out. Get the suits, Lemmy. We're going out.
What is it, Mitch? Well, there's one thing about this ship that's the same as ours.
What's that?
There are two rows of buttons at the top of each panel.
Leave them alone. Don't touch them.
You don't think I'm that crazy, do you? Beats me where the crew can be. Meanwhile, I'll search this cabin. Maybe this is just the airlock or something. The actual living quarters are further inside.
Oh. Oh, no. Doc. Listen. It's here.
Jet. Jet.
What is it, Doc?
Oh, the noise. It's here again. We can both hear it this time.
So can I.
Something's going to happen. It always does.
What about Mitch?
Hello. Hello, Mitch. Mitch, can you hear us? Mitch! He doesn't answer. Doc, you try to raise him.
Hello, Mitch. Can you hear me? This is Doc calling. Hello. Hello. Hello, Mitch. Oh, why did he have to go in that thing?
And why doesn't he come out?
Hello, Mitch. Hello.
Hello, Jeff. What's the matter?
Didn't you hear us calling you?
Didn't you hear the music?
It's nothing to be scared of. What? Watch your step, Earthmen. There are things out there, even on the fringe of space, you don't comprehend. You don't understand. Can't understand. That no beings in a three-dimensional world can ever hope to understand.
Three dimensions? You mean there is another dimension?
Of course, there's just one point I would like to say before we leave this rather inhospitable moon, and that is that we can only see one half of its surface.
Yes.
And there was a lovely little rhyme made up years ago about that, and it goes like this. O moon, lovely moon with the beautiful face, careering throughout the boundaries of space. Whenever I see you, I think in my mind, shall I ever, O ever, behold thy behind?
This is the BBC third programme. We present Mathry Beacon, a play written for radio by Giles Cooper.
fancy that black fellow having a trumpet.
Oh, him's okay.
Yes, but all black like that, fancy.
Same as anyone else, really. Oh, I hate unpacking.
Can he do up buttons?
You're taking the mickey.
Oh, I just wondered, with black fingers and that, I didn't know.
He can do anything, same as any other bloke, and he will, too, give him half a chance.
Fancy.
Too simple to live, you are.
1956 has been a year of considerable achievement in radio drama. Several contemporary European plays have been given their first performance on the third programme, and productions have ranged from classic tragedies to serious contemporary works.
This is the BBC third programme. We present A Hedge Backwards, a discovery for radio by Henry Reed. This is the last of four programmes concerning the researches of the scholar Herbert Reeve into the lives of Richard Schoen, a very great man indeed, Hilda Tablet, and others.
Amity, the music is going to be a pretty sharp smack for the Consolidated Instrumentalist so-called union.
Well, how have you managed that?
Conkers.
Conkers, Hilda?
Musique concrete. Concrete music. You know about it?
No.
You tape it.
Tape it?
And dub it to disc after. Of course, most of the Johnnies who do it rely on pure sound, amplified and speeded up and reversed and so on. Needless to say, I have my own little line on the thing. For one thing, I think the discerning listener could probably tell you almost at once that my musique concrete is very much louder than anybody else's.
Is it really?
Oh, yes, quite a bit. Also, for fair measure, I clamp in a few simple little haunting tunes of my own. That's why my own brand is called Musique Concrete Renforcée. Reinforced concrete music. Like to hear the block I've done for Antony and Cleopatra?
This is the BBC third programme. We are broadcasting now a recital given by the French cellist Maurice Gendron with the French pianist and composer Jean Francais.
This is the BBC third programme. This evening, Elisabeth Schwarzkopf is giving a waltz recital.
This is the BBC third program.
Stuck's Quasi Bellata and Jaco's 17 variations for horn, tenor klaxon, bongo, and oboe d'amore.
On October the 19th, 1956, a joint debate will be broadcast from the Oxford and Cambridge Union Societies. The motion is that this house would abolish the third programme.
Much of what is broadcast on the third programme is not suitable for broadcasting at all. The general public does not want to be improved and upgraded. It wants to be entertained. It comes in of an evening tired after a hard day. It takes off its boots and it eats its high tea. It just is not possible when one's days are spent labouring in the fields or in a factory to give one's mind to a translation of Ibsen or Stark or talk about the insects which live on the colobus monkey.
The third programme, inaugurated in September 1946, is designed for the listener of cultivated tastes and interests. And while it offers many opportunities for study, it is a programme for the educated rather than an educational programme. News bulletins and sports commentaries are not provided, nor are the popular forms of light entertainment.
Surely the intellectuals and modern musicians can be sufficiently honest with themselves to recognize that the book and the long-playing gramophone record are the proper mediums for their private culture. I call upon all honorable members to overthrow this astonished despotism and to recognize the third program for what it is, a factory for the weaving of emperor's clothing. Mr. President, I beg to move.
Old Trafford has redeemed itself with a last hour of flawless sunshine.
And Laker comes in again, hair flopping. Bowles turns it on to Manic Appeals. He's out, LBW.
The sound services have offered a greater profusion of sporting broadcasts than ever before. Listeners have been kept in touch with international sporting events in places as distant as Moscow and San Francisco. The Saturday evening sports report in the Light program has been developed into a full 60-minute program of sports news and comment.
And Laker comes in again, hair flopping. Bowles turns it on to Manic Appeals. He's out, LBW, and Laker's taken all day. And England have won by an innings and 170. And Laker has taken all 10 for 53.
Cover coming with 150 yards to go. And Devon Larson, about a length and a half ahead. He's now stretching away. The hands are coming off. He's three legs clear. It's Devon Larson, the next clear with 100 yards to go. Devon Larson, oh, he's gone down. Devon Larson's gone down. Sidney's gone down. Has been passed by ESV. But Gentlemoy in second place. And Eagle Lodge now coming up to third place. Although he's just pipped on the post by Royal Tan. Well, there was a man on the inside of the course, and Dick Francis is just holding his hand to his head. He can't believe it. And Dick Francis, absolutely the most miserable man to have got the race, the Grand National 1956, absolutely in his pocket bar an unaccountable slip.
Out of the car, the mechanics crowd round him, and Sterling Moss flashes past to take the checkered flag, and Fangio flashes past to take the checkered flag in second place. And an English driver has won the Grand Prix du Rhin.
This is the Midland Home Service, Motoring and the Motorist, a magazine program of interest to motorists, to their families, and their friends. And here is Bill Hartley.
Hello and good evening. Well, motoring is in the news, isn't it? The road's bad with snow and ice. Used car prices.
Motoring and the Motorist is for the man or woman who likes to get out and get under. Items include care of the car, progress in design, including such features as turbo vehicles, and the month's discussion point, a chance for speakers to ventilate their views on items of interest.
I think we're in for an even busier time on the roads this year, because as soon as the weather cheers up a bit, thousands more motorists than ever before are going to pour out onto the roads. I, for one, have got a few ideas as to what might be done to improve the general standard of behaviour on the roads. But for the moment, let's hear Raymond Mays. Well, you'll all know him as one of the most successful racing drivers we've ever had in this country, quite apart from being, of course, the man behind the BRM.
I cover something in the neighbourhood of 60 or 70,000 miles a year, and I think 80% of the motorists don't concentrate at all. I think we've got to take two headings. You've got daylight safety and night safety.
Yeah.
One of our small points in daylight safety is this business of very bad parking on blind corners. But the other day I came round a blind corner and found three policemen with three motorbikes having a lovely chat on the corner of the road, quarter-blocking the road, and that was that. I must, as we little time, I want to go on to this night business. And I'm very hot on this offside front side light. And I think there should be some telltale on every motor car or lorry to show whether it's a light or not. You're apt to see a single light coming down the road, you think it's a motorbike. And the number of accidents that happen, so imagining that is a motorbike, is just unbelievable. I've had three cars under my own control very badly smashed by that.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock. Around 10 o'clock tonight, put your flat flags up.
Does the team approve of the action by the watch committee of certain cities in banning the film Rock Around the Clock to the disappointment of many young enthusiasts? General Thorpe.
Well, now, I am a lover of music, therefore I'm prejudiced and don't like jazz. Jazz to me comes from the jungle, and this is jungle music taken to its logical conclusion. This is musical Mau Mau. No, what worries me is that a fourth-rate film with fifth-rate music can pierce through the thin shell of civilization and send people into turn them into wild dervishes. Now, if that's what's going to happen, policemen's hats will be knocked off, people will be dancing in the streets, dustbins will be turned over, lampposts will be smashed, milk bottles will be strewn round, and 2,000 hooligans will be marching down the street. Faced with that, I think it's not unreasonable to ban it.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, you cry all the time. There's an old piano and a train hop behind the feet. See you later, alligator. After a while,
see you later, alligator. Internal BBC memo. The Dance Music Policy Committee has refused to pass the following songs for broadcasting. A Corset Can Do a Lot for a Lady. Don't Get Carried Away. A Teenage Prayer. Has Anyone Seen My Pom?
Jiving. What a thing to do. Can you see me jiving? I've never had the faintest temptation, I may say. It's not my idea of fun at all. And I think that one of the purposes of us old fogies in life is to stop young people from being silly.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're being exceedingly silly. If they want to be teddy boys, well, I'd rather they went off to Cairo and started teddy boying around there. There might be something.
In this island, forces are massing for a landing in the Suez Canal Zone. But meanwhile, the air assault goes on. According to official communiques today, this has now been switched to Egyptian tanks, and a concentration of them 4 miles southwest of the Giza Pyramids near Cairo have been attacked by rocket and cannon-firing British Venoms and French Thunderstreaks.
The House was calmer when it resumed, and the most of censure was moved by the opposition deputy leader, Mr. James Griffiths. He said the Prime Minister had divided the nation more deeply and more bitterly than he remembered. The government had plunged the country into an unjustifiable and wicked war, and might well have dealt a mortal blow to Commonwealth unity. Mr. Griffith's final phrase, "We asked the government to get out," was taken up in chorus from the Labour side.
An Allied communique issued before 6 o'clock this evening says Port Said and Port Fuad are in Allied hands and work has already started on clearing the entrance to the Suez Canal. In Hungary, sporadic fighting is still reported between groups of insurgents and the Soviet army.
Radio is no longer a schoolboy's tale, the plaything of an hour. Broadcasting goes on round the clock. There is a feeling of excitement, of history in the making. The BBC has made full use of its services of news and information to cover the Suez crisis. In this way, broadcasting can help towards an informed democracy.
Now, before we have the first question, I must point out that the question which very many of our audience have handed in to be discussed cannot be dealt with in this program because of the 14-day rule.
Oh, well, that's monstrous, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, really?
Absolutely monstrous. Yes, the stuff that cannot be discussed.
Take no notice of the team.
Mr. Chairman, the 14-day rule, if it applies to anything, applies to issues which have not yet been discussed by the House of Commons.
Yes. All right.
They've been doing nothing else but talk about it for days. We really must discuss it.
If there's one thing that Stephen McCadden and I are agreed about, and I don't think there are many others at the present time, it's that it seems to me absolute nonsense that you should have two members of Parliament and two other very well-informed people and an obviously very well-informed and interested audience and not to be allowed to talk about the one thing that everybody in this country and the whole world is thinking about. This really makes the whole programme absolutely ridiculous.
And we're so united in this that what I must say is I cannot understand why I, as a journalist, am allowed to write and discuss this in a newspaper, but I'm not allowed to talk about it and discuss it on the radio. It seems to me the most nonsensical rule.
Well, it is quite silly that Parliament, which is supposed to be the guarantor of free speech, should be the institution which is now suppressing it on the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, I won't agree to the suggestion that Parliament's suppressing this. I think this is a narrow and strict interpretation by the BBC, yes. Which is not a silly nonsense.
No,
yes. No, 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 no,
every year, the post office asks the general public to cooperate with them by posting early for Christmas. So, for Let's Go Somewhere tonight, Brian Johnston's gone down to Oxford to see how the people there are helping to carry out this request.
Okay, well, when I tell you that I'm extremely cramped and that I'm sitting in a space about 2 feet square and 4'9" high, that my voice sounds rather hollow, and that every now and again something keeps on hitting me on the head, will you believe me when I assure you I'm in a pillar box, a letter box? And every now and again, since 7 o'clock when I just got in here, letters have been popping in, packages and so on, and knocking me on the head, and I'm getting a very fair idea that Oxford are doing a jolly good job here in posting early. There's one name I can't quite resist, which came in about 5 minutes ago. It's to our old playmate Arthur Askey, who's playing at the New Theatre at the moment. I suppose that's from a fan. And altogether, they seem to be playing the game very well by the post office, because we've got all the addresses very clearly written, which is one of the things the post office... Oh, that one got me on the head. A package addressed to... Where's that going to? It's going to Reading. By the way, that knocking then was Henry Riddle. We've got him outside because I wanted to see if anyone who's posted a letter would like to be interviewed through the slit in front. And obviously, if they saw my face appearing, I got that one, got me on the nose, if anyone saw me appearing, they might have a faint. I don't blame them. So he's just drawn someone aside, I think, that was a signal to say, would they mind being interviewed through the slit in the top? So I'm just going to get out of my cramped position and just see who we've got here. And I can see an eye there of a man.
Hello. I'm walking backwards for Christmas across the Irish Sea. I'm walking backwards for Christmas. It's the only thing for me.
Switch on the electric type wireless.
Hello, folks. Here's the old weather. The old moon's like a variable. Gonna have the sun in a day. I'm going to get dark at night.
BBC Internal Memo. At the end of 1956, it can be said that an event which has caused great controversy has been the change in the shipping forecast. After all the previous discussions, there are now complaints that ships have been unable to hear the forecasts because they do not have suitable radio equipment. We feel that the only remedy is that ships should be equipped with long-wave receivers. This should not be a costly matter, as an ordinary domestic receiver is adequate for the purpose. This should resolve the problem to everyone's satisfaction.
Oh, well. December the 31st. Another year over.
Yeah, it's been a good year for me personally. The first year I ever really felt relaxed and at ease.
Yes, of course. You've been out of work all the year, haven't you? It's been very hard for you, hasn't it? I don't know how you kept your reason. I'm not even sure that you have. There must be some marbles missing somewhere. It's not natural. Not natural to be as idle as you are. You could write a book on how to be lazy. If you weren't so lazy. Now, let's get one thing straight. We're not having a repetition of bone idleness in 1957. Oh, well, so much for me, darling. Just one more entry to be made. December the 31st. Did radio show today. Sued by man who wrote The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Oh, well, you can't please everybody. I'm going to bed.